Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by
law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Welcome to More Outdoors on News Talk 560 KLVI. This is Chester Moore, and do I have an exciting program for you? We're going to talk about something I've never had in 23 years on the radio, falconry with Britt Perry. Check this interview out. Back in late January, I got invited to go to north central Louisiana, around Leesville, to photograph the capturing and releasing of eastern wild turkeys with the Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries. And I met a young lady there who worked for the National Wild Turkey Federation, and they were doing all this work, and she mentioned that she is involved in falconry. And I'm like, oh my God, that is so cool, because I've always thought falconry was fascinating. I love raptors. Birds of prey are amazing animals.
Hi there.
So, besides being a falconer, tell me a little bit about your background in terms of wildlife and where you work, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so I got my degree in wildlife ecology at LSU. I work for Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries doing a bunch of bird work, you know, mainly banding. That was kind of my bread and butter. And then I went on to work for the private industry, more or less a lot of wetland delineations, environmental compliance, like for third-party companies for mostly oil and gas. And now I am with Wild Turkey Federation.
Very, very cool. So falconry, that's not just something you like, you know, go pick up and do. What's the process? What inspired you to start off with to get involved in falconry?
Yeah, so what inspired me was actually something really simple. I saw someone else doing it.
Okay.
Yeah. It was this guy. He's like a friend of a friend of a friend on social media, Tyler Sladen. It's like, this guy's out here catching stuff with his birds.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just kind of something you see. And I knew. I was like, I can do that.
Yeah.
And I would be really good at that. And it was just a follow through with that.
Very cool. So you saw it. You went for it, but you can't just go for it. There's like a process legally and otherwise. So kind of walk us through, someone who might be interested in doing this, what it takes to get involved in falconry.
Yes. So these birds are typically trapped from the wild. So there is a lot of red tape kind of regarding falconry and getting into it. So there's three levels of falconry. There are apprentice, general, and master. You start off as an apprentice, and to become an apprentice, you have to pass a 100-question test taken through your state agency. Then you have to also find a falconry sponsor for you to do your apprenticeship. Now, your falconry sponsor has to be a general level or higher, and they're going to sponsor you for 2 years. So to find one of those, you kind of have to get into the falconry community, reach out to your local state club, and make connections and find someone who you really want to learn from. And they're going to sponsor you. So that is your second step. The last step before you get your license is having a state inspection. So they're going to come to your home. They're going to kind of look at your falconry equipment you're going to be using and where your bird is going to be housed, and just making sure it's safe for the bird and kind of approved gear. And then you're handed your permit and you can go off and do falconry.
Now, you got to have a bird first.
Yes.
So let's talk about that process. First, we're hearing the word falconry, but it's not just falcons. So what all kinds of birds of prey are using this and legal to use in the U.S.?
Yeah, so it is called falconry, but falcons and hawks used.
Okay.
And in very rare cases, owls. So it's more or less, you know, hunting with a raptor.
Yeah.
And there are some really popular species that are preferred to be used because they are just good at catching game you know, you're not going to want to use a species that's not going to be good at catching game, because then what's the point?
Yep, exactly. You're going hunting. If you have a rifle that's not firing all the time, you don't bring that rifle, right?
Correct.
Yeah, same kind of thing, but you're using a hawk or a falcon. So let's talk about what you have. We saw this beautiful little bird. It happens to be my favorite raptor, a kestrel, yesterday.
Yes, yes. I trapped my kestrel about 2 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
So she's a fun little project that I'm flying in the springtime. We are focusing on European starlings. So,
okay.
You know, while the normal hunting season is closed off, mm-hmm. it ended in the winter for mm-hmm. most game species, we have this opportunity to catch birds, well, you know, European starlings outside of hunting seasons because they are an invasive species.
Yeah.
So that's going to be like my focus this spring. And we've caught a couple already.
Helping with invasive species with a beautiful little kestrel. And you're talking about the metabolism earlier, really fast metabolism. So I take it these kestrels are pretty fast.
Yes, yes. So they burn their food kind of at a higher rate. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't make sense when you don't know a lot about falconry, but it's a lot of weighing their food and weighing the bird, making sure the bird is ready to hunt. Because if you try and hunt a bird that has like a full stomach,
mm-hmm.
well, they're just not going to want to hunt. They're mm-hmm. going to be like, well, you know, I ate just a little while ago. Like,
yeah.
Why do I need to go out and use energy to catch? So it's a lot of training along with motivation because they're hungry.
Yeah. Makes perfect sense. You also have a goshawk.
Yes, I do.
So tell us about that bird.
So that bird was kind of a special project. This season that didn't really work out for me, if we're being honest. I moved in the middle of the hunting season, so I was put in an unfamiliar place mm-hmm. with game that I wasn't familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
So my whole season fell apart. My bird wasn't too good on squirrels. It was a whole mess. I mean, we had a lot of fun. I got to travel to Oklahoma, had some good hunts out there, and also West Texas was pretty fun. But back, you know, at my home, like grounds, I just didn't know that well this season. So I wouldn't say I was like really catching a lot of game where I'm used to.
So we've mentioned starlings.
Yeah.
We've also mentioned like squirrels. So what are the things you can hunt with different kinds of raptors? So obviously like a kestrel, something like that, smaller items, birds. But like with maybe like a red-tailed hawk or a Harris hawk or a goshawk, what would be like the smaller and bigger prey items you would go hunt?
Yeah, so some popular like game on them, you would do rabbits.
Okay.
Jackrabbits.
Oh, cool.
We mentioned squirrels. So that's like some of the more popular fur animals. Mm-hmm. But then you have quail, you have pheasant, you have ducks. You know, some people are getting really good at catching snipe with falcons.
Snipe.
Which is this whole other branch of falconry that's really emerging that I think is super interesting.
I find it fascinating that you catch a wild raptor and then you have it sitting on your hand, trained to fly off and catch something and bring it back to you. How does that happen? What is the process of catching that bird? I guess there's a bonding process.
Oh, okay. So they never bring it back to you. Only in very special cases
okay.
can they be trained. But no, that's actually...
That's a misnomer?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because typically a bird is going to catch something bigger than them and not be able to fly off with it.
Gotcha.
So they can't bring it back to you. And, you know, honestly, them taking it down is going to be more of a process than them just grabbing it and bringing it to you. But I forgot what you asked.
I asked about the process of being able to get that bird trained to do that.
Oh, my goodness. That is just like a whole conversation. But it's amazing. So you can take this bird from out of the wild, and within a month's time, mm-hmm. you can have it hunting with you. It's that fast.
That's incredible to think about, because I have a zoological facility. I work with some species that are wild animals. Mm-hmm. And like we have a red fox we're licensed to have at our facility. And I might be able to train that goofy thing to sit or something, or maybe even shake at some point. But if I told that thing to get out the cage and, hey, there's a rabbit, I would never see it again. You know, like it'd be sayonara. We're out of here. We're going to run off with the rabbit. So it's amazing that these birds are able to do that. Is there, like when you first catch the bird, someone told me once you have to like have it on your arm for a certain amount of period. I mean, is how do you get that bird used to you and not freaking out when you approach?
Okay, so most like any other sports, there's many different ways to do something. Mm-hmm. And then it's debated and debated, like my way is better than your way and blah, yeah. blah, blah.
Yeah.
So I'm going to tell you my way, though.
Okay, so we want really Britt's successful. Way today.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and in general, it's a lot of people's way.
Yeah.
You catch the bird. Mm-hmm. It's you bring it home. It's tethered to a perch. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it can jump on and off of the perch, but it is ultimately tethered there. Yeah. You weigh that bird. Mm-hmm. So you take it, you put it on a scale, you see how much it weighs, and you're like, okay. And then you can also feel on its keel, like how much, like the fat deposit area. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you know how much, I guess, like energy storage this bird has. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, that's your first day. Next day, you know, this bird is not going to be happy to see you.
Sure.
It's a wild animal. It does not see the value in you yet.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? You go up to the bird. You know, you're very slow. You don't want to frighten it. And you show it food. It'll look at the food. It'll be like, you know what? I see it. You're not attacking me. I appreciate that. But I don't want you near me. I'm scared of you.
Yeah.
But I see that food. Mm-hmm. But I'm good. Mm-hmm. Like, don't come near me. I can go without eating today. Okay, fine. So maybe you go back either later that day or the next day. Well, it's going to see that food now. And it's going to say, you know what? You haven't killed me yet. I think I'm into this food thing. On the first day or the next day. It's very rare.
When we come back, we'll talk more with Britt Perry about falconry. Welcome back to More Outdoors on News Talk 560 KLVI. This is Chester Moore. Talk with my friend Britt Perry about falconry.
But, you know, you will feed the bird. And they're like, oh, okay, cool. So then it becomes this thing where they see you. You give it some food. And now it's a good response.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens in only a couple of days. Like, they are very smart and they put together this... So all the while you are weighing this bird every day and making sure that it doesn't lose a lot of weight.
Mm-hmm.
And you're checking on the fat deposits because you want this bird to be healthy. Like in no sense is this like starving the bird. You're just kind of managing its weight and getting rid of those fat deposits. So mm-hmm. it's more readily wanting to work for rewards.
Mm-hmm.
And it also strikes that instinct for it to hunt. So then the biggest gap in falconry is when you have the bird on the perch, then you put like a little piece of food on your glove. You maybe hold it a foot away from mm-hmm. the perch and you show it to them. Now, at this point, you'd been kind of like giving the bird mm-hmm. the food, but now the bird has to make a decision. Hey, I see the food, but this person isn't giving it to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I can either not eat it or I can jump to the glove
mm-hmm.
and, you know, get my food. This is the critical point of mm-hmm. falconry because at this point, the bird is going to choose.
Mm-hmm.
to go out of its way to get the food from you.
Yeah.
So this happens typically maybe at the end of the first week.
Mm-hmm.
The bird will jump to you. You whistle. Okay. You give it its food. And you just get further and further away. Then the bird's flying to you.
Mm-hmm.
It's loving this. And all the while, you are still weighing the bird, making sure that it's in good condition. And then at some point, You get rid of their fat deposits. The bird is in a fit condition and ready to hunt every day. And they are going to follow you in the wild because they're like, well, I'm out here. We're free flying. I know whenever she whistles, I will come to her and get a treat. But you flip the script on them. And this is probably like week three.
Okay.
You're out there flying. And let's say I'm out in a field with rabbits. Well, I'm going to kick up a rabbit and it's going to, I guess, flee from me. And the bird's going to see that and they're going to be like, oh, wow, food. I'm going to go get it. And they will. And they're like, okay, that was pretty cool. You do it a second time. And then they learn, wow, if I go with this person, I'm going to be catching things pretty easy. And it just becomes this partnership.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, you mentioned that there's kind of a, if you got a bird that's compliant, that's willing to do this, it's kind of a quick transition from capture to actually going hunting, you know, pretty quick. But are there levels in like, you know, like this in terms of, okay, I've already got him on squirrels or now we're going to go for rabbits? Or is there a certain level, or do you have to kind of feel out the birds and see if they're capable for certain things?
So every bird is an individual, and especially things can be taught. Things can, of course, be taught to the bird. But some will excel at other forms of falconry than others. Like even that same individual, like from the same species, like a red-tailed hawk might be great at catching squirrels. But I go out to West Texas and I bring that West Texas bird to like the Southeast for squirrels. And it'll be like, what are these?
Yeah.
You know, and you have to actually teach it like, hey, this is game. We chase it like this, you know, get up in the tree. So sometimes the juice isn't worth the squeeze to teach a bird a new technique. It just depends.
Yeah. So you mentioned it'll, in Texas, you can legally hunt waterfowl during a falconry season, right? So there's a waterfowl thing. What species would be good for someone to go waterfowl hunting like this?
So the species depends on where you live. So let's say that you are out in West Texas and it's a very open area, not a lot of trees. You have like small cattle ponds. Well, guess what? That is great for falcons. Now, if you lived in a place that had like wood ducks and, you know, they're in like forest and small little puddle-like streams, well, a falcon's not going to be a good bird because they can't use their diving technique
to attack
because there's trees. So you would want more of a goshawk in a wooded situation. So that kind of dictates what type of bird you want. And then sometimes you do get to choose, and you just choose the type of flight you want.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool because there's a lot of options out there, you know, with like waterfowl, you mentioned invasive species like starlings, things like that. Have you ever had a situation where a bird went after something that it wasn't supposed to go after?
So it's rare that that happens, but it does happen. And so there's this rule or this kind of built in. It's called the let it lie rule. And so basically, let's say one of my birds went after a starling, but they accidentally caught a cardinal.
Yeah.
Well, that wasn't intentional. You can't control the bird. As long as you don't harvest it and you let it lie,
sure,
it's fine.
Yeah, because in the wild, they probably do that anyway. You know, they're gonna.
Of course.
They're not gonna go, that's a protected non-game bird. You know.
You know, and falconers are really good about not taking advantage of this rule. You know, you're not gonna see falconers outside of the like duck season catching ducks and being like, oh, well, let it lie.
Yeah.
Because in general, it's a close community and they really self-regulate themselves and hold each other accountable. So, you know, we are really privileged to fly these birds.
Sure. Absolutely. And falconry goes back, you know, practically eons, you know, the idea of people using these kind of birds and animals for, you know, back in the day, catching food for dinner at night, right?
Yeah, super fascinating. I don't even know the whole history mm-hmm. of falconry because it's so extensive and mm-hmm. it goes across many cultures.
Yep. I find it interesting in China, they actually train cormorants to go catch fish.
Okay, I saw a documentary on that, uh-huh. and I was just so gung-ho to try that. But we can't do that in the U.S. because they're protected, and unlike, you know, the falconry laws, it only covers raptors mm-hmm. and approved, like, species like that. It will not cover, you know, doing, I guess, fishing with cormorants.
I thought that was fascinating watching that thing, you know, but it's like, whoa, a good use for cormorants. When we come back on More Outdoors, we'll talk more with Britt Perry about falconry.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome back to More Outdoors on News Talk 560 KLVI. Don't forget you can listen online at KLVI.com. Also the iHeartRadio app. You can check my workout at HigherCalling.net. Also every month in Texas Fishing Game Magazine. And find me on Higher Calling Wildlife on Facebook and at The Chester Moore on Instagram. Wrapping up our conversation with Britt Perry about falconry. You know?
I know, right?
Now, you have these beautiful birds, but I believe that your goshawk is of a European variety?
Yes. So he is a captive bred bird. Yeah. So most birds used in falconry in the U.S. are taken from the wild. Mm-hmm. But every once in a while, you'll get like a specialty bird. Like, so these goshawks are from Europe. They're slightly bigger than the North American breed that we have here. Mm-hmm. And they're a little bit less, I guess, like neurotic. But, you know, it's just a different falconry bird.
Now, legally, would you have to have a permit to have a European captive bred one?
Yeah, you still need to have a permit and yeah. especially to fly it on game yeah. that is hunting.
Yeah, I didn't know sure for sure because I know that Eurasian eagle owls can be bought out there in the zoological world mm-hmm. under a little bit different than like you couldn't go catch a great horned owl here, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. I guess that would be more of like a educational permit
yeah.
or like a you know breeding permit, but I guess a falconry license, mm-hmm. your bird has to be used for
hunting. A different thing. The reason I asked that is because I know people that may have a facility or something and think, oh, something's clicking now.
Uh-huh.
Look up different permits. There are probably different things going on for what you're looking for. Now, you mentioned owls. I've never seen an owl used in a falconry type setting, but you said some people do use owls?
Some people try to use owls.
Try to use owls. Okay, there's a delineation here.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, owls are itself, it's not that they're not good predators. You know, they are. They're great. But they are just not like as food motivated as like a falcon or a hawk. So they're a little bit harder to train.
Okay.
And so falconry purposes, it's kind of hard to motivate an owl mm-hmm. to get to like hunt with you and, you know, perform certain tasks because they're just, I don't want to call them dumb. They just aren't motivated in a way that's like constructive. But now there are people out there that are having a little bit of success with them. Like it can be done, you know.
I mean, it'd be kind of cool to see a great horned owl fly off in one's arm and attack a rabbit or something,
right?
Oh,
yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm not saying that it can't be done.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a different route to do the same thing.
You know, it's interesting you say that. There's always someone who figures something out. So, like I mentioned to an animal trainer one time, you know, I said, you know the one big predator I've never seen in a captive setting trained a polar bear? He goes, look up the Russian circus in the 1960s. And some lady in Russia had 10 polar bears at one time in a ring standing up doing tricks for her.
Wow.
And no one's ever did it. So maybe someone, if you're listening out there, maybe someone has a really cool owl. But I thought I'd ask it because a lot of people just think owls are magnificent, beautiful birds.
Oh,
you know?
And they are.
Yeah. I think they're really cool. It's amazing they're not food driven, because if you ever had a deer blind populated by like a barn owl, they crap everything out. It seems like they eat a lot of stuff, but that, it seems like maybe the hawks and the falcons are a little more intense about that.
Yeah, they certainly are, and maybe a little bit bolder.
So a little bolder, yeah.
But, you know, that's just what I've heard. Personally, I've never worked with an owl.
Yeah.
I've never tried to train one, so, you know, what do I know?
Well, a lot more than I do. That's why I'm asking you the questions, lady.
Don't
get snarky with me. I'm just kidding. So, you know, you have a kestrel. Has anyone ever used merlins?
Yes. So merlins are a popular falconry bird.
Okay.
Man, one of my friends, Alyssa, up in Idaho, she taught her merlin how to take quail.
Oh, cool.
Now, that is awesome. We went quail hunting last winter.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about fun.
I bet. You know, quail hunting's fun anyway, with the idea of, now how does that work? They just, do you flush them, or do they see, you kind of find out where a covey is and they go in after it? How does that work?
Yeah, so you'll have the quail, or you'll have the merlin out. Mm. You'll be in the field, you know, kind of like a scrubby type situation.
Mm-hmm.
And the merlin will either wait on, which is when the falcon takes to the air and will hover above you, like,
okay,
kind of like anywhere from like 100 feet or so.
Yeah.
You know, not too far, mm-hmm, but they'll be there, or they'll take a high perch,
okay,
where they can see you. And we will go out into the field, and either we're looking for the quail and trying to just like get them to flush, or she actually has a Brittany, and we go and use her, and we'll flush the quail. Well, the quail will get up, start trying to fly away,
mm-hmm,
and that merlin will come out of nowhere,
mm-hmm,
and smoke one.
That's
it's pretty cool.
That is pretty neat. You had mentioned getting involved and helping with invasive exotics like European starlings.
Mm-hmm.
Has there ever been anyone like in some of these big cities working with like kill rats or anything like that? Has that ever heard of that before?
Okay, so not rats, which it can be done, but then you have this whole thing like, were the rats poisoned? Why is my bird sick? Oh,
yeah,
I ate that rat. But let me tell you about abatement falconry.
Okay.
So it is not a form of hunting, but it is a way to use trained raptors,
mm-hmm,
to chase off unwanted like flocks of birds. So I'm sure, like, you know, you live in Texas. We have a lot of grackles in the area, especially,
yes,
around, I guess, like now in the fall,
mm-hmm,
and,
mm-hmm,
well, anytime. And they just, I guess, like all come in on parking lots and,
yep,
poop on everything. Well, guess what? We have a solution to that. People take their hawks or falcons,
mm-hmm,
and they chase them from the area. You do, mm-hmm, that a couple times a week, and the birds learn not to be there.
That's cool.
Yeah, it can pay pretty well, too.
Making a living chasing grackles with your falcon. How cool is that? Really, really neat stuff. So how long have you been doing this now?
Like 5 years, which doesn't feel like a long time, but I think back to all my experiences and stuff, I'm like, oh, that's a jam-packed 5 years.
Jam-packed 5 years. Do you have any falconry goals?
Ooh. I guess just do what I do, but do it in style.
I like that.
Yeah. You know, you can be successful and have the numbers, but I want to do it in style.
Mm-hmm. So obviously you're now in Louisiana. You mentioned potentially hunting a woodcock.
Yes,
yeah,
yes. So that's going to be a whole thing for me. I, while I have, like, in my wildlife work, like, banded and caught woodcock, I have never hunted them before, which is just totally different. So it's going to be a bigger learning curve for me out there, and trying to put that together while also trying to manage my bird and trying to hunt it. So I've got to do some prep work this summer if I go that route.
Very cool, though. That's a great way to do it in style, adapt to the area you're in.
Yes.
Try,
yes,
some different stuff and get a different flavor for falconry.
That is definitely the key to this, because you can't be successful unless you're doing the falconry that's available to you. And for me, that's I'm in a new area and I've got to learn that habitat.
So if someone wants to learn more about falconry, is there an organization or something they can check out?
Yeah. So like their state club is going to be probably their number one resource. And to find their state club, they can just Google it or reach out to your state wildlife and fisheries. Mm-hmm. But in North America, we have a bigger club, the National Club. It's called...
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
North American Falconers Association. Mm-hmm. So you would just go to their website. They usually list all the state clubs, but it's like great information.
Mm-hmm. And if someone wants to check you out on social media, give us your social info.
Yeah, so I have a Instagram. It's @winged_hunt.
@winged_hunt. And she is also the cover girl for the March-April Texas Fishing Game, releasing an awesome wild turkey Jake into the woods of North Central Louisiana or Central Louisiana. Doing a lot of work with wildlife. Seems birds are a really important part of your world right now, right?
Yes, I am a bird nerd.
So the bird nerd here is going to be doing it in style with her goshawk and her kestrel. Brittany, thanks for hanging out with me on the program.
Yeah, thank you.
Awesome. When we come back on More Outdoors, we're going to talk about an exciting new project. Welcome back to More Outdoors on News Talk 560 KLVI. This is Chester Moore. You know, of all the topics that I've ever done on this program, I would say in the last 5 years, the one that's gotten the most response has been human dangers in the great outdoors. Hogs get huge response. Sharks and flounder get huge response. When I talk about the human dangers in the great outdoors, people listen and they respond. And what I have done, me and my friend Paul Fusinski, we have produced a documentary called Dark Outdoors. And if you would like to get exclusive access to this documentary for free, you can just email me at chester@chestermoore.com. That's chester@chestermoore.com, or hit me up on Facebook or Instagram with a direct message, and I'll send you a passcode to watch this special documentary that will be released in the fall to the public. But you'll get exclusive access to this because I am creating something special out of Dark Outdoors, working on an event, a lot of things going on. And it's all about not only the human dangers in the great outdoors, wildlife dangers, strange, bizarre weather patterns, things that we broke and talked about first here in different times over the years, doing wildlife investigations. And I've had some really interesting conversations with people. And one of the things that has been shocking to me is how many people say they don't go to X, Y, or Z spot to hunt, fish, camp, hike, birdwatch, whatever they do, because of the human dangers, the criminal elements in the great outdoors. It is shocking to me. And it probably shouldn't be because I have spots I no longer go. I've got spots I'll go in the daytime, won't dare go at night. I've got spots I just completely abandoned because of the meth activity. And just places that are like, you know, creep me out a little bit. So if you have a location or you have had an experience that's harrowing involving human dangers in the outdoors, email me. I would like to hear your story and share it with others. It might save some lives. Chester@chestermoore.com. That's chester@chestermoore.com. Or if you're on my Facebook, send me a message there. Or on my Instagram, send me a direct message. I would like to hear these stories because I've heard it about large stretches of beach. I've heard it about, I'm going to say, the Sam Houston National Forest. I've heard it about different fishing areas. People just won't go anymore. All along the Texas coast, all along the East Texas corridor, and then a little bit out into the Texas Hill Country as well. But we're going to be expanding sort of the scope of these investigations. And it gets really, really interesting. And the Sam Houston National Forest is, we had this on our program maybe 3 years ago, the first time with my friend Jerry Dean, who has Missing Persons of America. She's also the one who founded the Missing Texas 40 Project, which is probably close to 60 people missing in Montgomery and San Jacinto counties. A lot of that was around the edges of the Sam Houston National Forest. Of course, there's been a fair amount of John and Jane Does found out there. There have been some murders out there that have been people convicted for those murders. A lot of crazy stuff. And the idea of talking about these human elements is not to make you afraid. It is to make you aware. And to me, that is an incredibly important part of this whole equation. Making you aware of what's really going on in the great outdoors. Because, look, you can listen to where to go buy shiners for crappie or live bait for shrimp anywhere. Google it. But you're not going to get investigations like this and stuff. And that's why through my various media platforms, I'm talking about this. And I'm very, very excited about the element of being able to do this. And the first step of that is releasing a documentary. And if you would like to check out that documentary and get alerts for our e-newsletter we're going to have on the Dark Outdoors Project, email me at chester@chestermoore.com. That's in it, and you'll get it before the public does. Chester@chestermoore.com, or hit me up on one of the social media platforms with your email address. But I want to kind of wrap up the program tonight talking about this in just a very simple way. And that is something that has been with me for a long time. The idea of the gut feeling. Now, I'm a follower of Christ. And I believe the Holy Spirit will communicate dangers to you and things like that at times. And I didn't always know that my whole life, but I was in Venezuela in 1999. I was just turned 26 years old, all expense paid trip to fish Venezuela. Holy smokes, a dream trip, right? I was so humbled and excited to be there. On our way out, I just felt something bad. And I saw some military build up around the airport, and I just knew I needed to get out now. I mean, whatever happens, get out. Our flight was late, and there was an incident where we were told there were no more flights for 3 days. I kind of made a scene. A lady gave me a ticket for 3 hours later. I was the only person on the red eye. There was one seat left next to me on the whole huge plane back at like 2 o'clock in the morning. I get home, and in the city I was in, Caracas, 10,000 people had died. Mega mudslide. Gut feelings. If you go somewhere and you feel like, you know what, I don't see anything, I don't hear anything, but something's not right, go. Leave. Could be a danger there. Don't be all like, well, I'm tough and I'm a big tough guy and whatever. And no, better to walk away and go back to your family. That's a very, very important thing. And another thing I just want to kind of warn people about a little bit is there seems to be some scams going on where people, are like acting like they're hurt, stuff like that, asking for help, and they're robbing people. And this is something that Ted Bundy did. Literally, I had a discussion with The Confessions of a Killer guy, the guy who interviewed Ted Bundy. It was a great interview with him, just talking to this guy. And I had a real privilege of just sitting to talk with the guy. And he said that was kind of Ted Bundy's shtick. A lot of people don't realize Ted Bundy killed every woman we know he killed, was ended up being in the woods somewhere, dumped or killed there, taken there and killed. So if you're out in the great outdoors, especially if you're a single woman, you're by yourself or with your family, or you're young, and someone has a distress thing, be very careful how you proceed. Just heard some things out there that are I'm seeing a pattern form, not locally yet, but around the nation. And there's a couple of things like that have happened in national parks. So just be careful. A warning, proceed with caution. You always want to help folks, but you know, you don't want to end up in the back of a big white van somewhere headed toward a torture chamber either, you know. These are things we got to watch out for, because the dark, you know, the dark is scary, but if you shine light there and enlighten people, it's not so scary. So that's kind of why I want to talk about these issues. And if you watch this documentary that we put together, again, you can email me, Chester@ChesterMoore.com, or hit me up on Facebook or Instagram with a private message or email address. Sign up for the email list I'm putting together to raise awareness to safety. You get a free documentary that me and my friend Paul Fizinski of Aptitude Outdoors put together. It is really interesting. It's fun, but it's got some scary stuff in it too about human elements of the outdoors, a little bit of wildlife elements of dangers in the outdoors as well. And I just want to shine the light. Everyone have a good time out there. Like I said, I'm an actual journalist. I actually dig into stories, and I got to dig deeper sometimes in where the fish are biting. I love that, but sometimes there's other elements we need to put together that the outdoors media often doesn't report on for whatever reason. Even the mainstream media doesn't report on. So that's kind of what I do. I bring interesting information, and this is taking me on a very interesting trail. So make sure and be careful out there. I've heard about these scams where people are acting hurt and they're robbing you or doing this and others. And this was a ploy of a very dangerous person a long time ago. And I've heard about some of this going on in national parks. So just be careful, proceed with caution, that kind of stuff. And go out in the outdoors, not to be afraid, but to be aware, not only of the human thing, but when we're seeing rising bear attacks, boar attacks, moose attacks. Be careful how you proceed everywhere you go. Have an incredible time like I do. I never go in the woods afraid, but if I feel that gut feeling, I shouldn't be there, whether on the water or in the woods, hunting, hiking, whatever I'm doing, I turn back so I can see my family again. You know, that's the most important thing. God bless you guys. Hope you enjoyed the show about falconry tonight. I thought it was awesome. Good talking to Britt Perry. God bless you guys, and have a great, great outdoors weekend.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.